What's up, Fight Fan? You're listening to MMA Daily, the podcast where we bring you the latest in the world of mixed martial arts. It is Monday, April 24th, 2023, and this week's episode, Sergey Surges Past Blades. We'll talk about this Saturday's past UFC event, Sergey Pavlovich taking on Curtis Blades, and we'll talk about a busy weekend in combat sports, a doubleheader in Hawaii from Bellator, a new Grand Prix winner, and certainly a lot of things to talk about in the women's flyweight division. We'll talk about the latest in MMA news, fight announcements, and more of them, to be quite honest with you. And we'll cap the show off by previewing this coming Saturday's UFC main event, the bantamweight fight between Song Yadong and Ricky Simone. My name is Gabriel Gonzalez, and I'm joined by my co-host, Natalie Zamudio.
Hello, Double G. I know we're talking about MMA. I don't want to derail, but I am still reeling a little bit from Davis Garcia boxing. I don't know if you caught any of it.
Of course.
Yeah, and just look, if you're a Davis fan, you're over the moon. If you're a Garcia fan, you're just shaking your head wondering what the heck went wrong. But I don't know. What was your take?
I mean, I got to say, that felt like a fight where, I mean, look at both of them. I don't know that either of them really actually took a solid punch to the face. I mean, Ryan Garcia looks so clean at the post-fight press conference. I was, you know, respectfully like, are you sure you got into a fight there, man? And then obviously Tank Davis did what Tank Davis does. But yeah, I'm not going to lie. Anticlimactic. I felt like that fight was fine. It did not knock my socks off. I think we saw someone who was already considered the better fighter.
Yeah.
And then suddenly we're talking about the rehydration and all this, and it just kind of took away from the fun, if you ask me. But look, I'm glad they got it together. I hope the boys made a ton of money, but that was my feeling about it. What about you?
Yeah, you know, Ryan Garcia gets to keep his purse, right? If you were following the Instagram challenge there. So that's fine. Although, this is what I'm thinking. If you would put it on the line and you said, I give you my word, if I lose, you can have my purse, would you still keep it if the opponent told you you could keep it?
You know, there's a lot of talk about, you know, what the things people say to promote a fight. I would like just once someone to... here's the thing. I mean, two guys talking big on IG to promote a fight is not the same as a legally binding contract, verbal, written, or otherwise, right?
Oh, man.
That's what I'll say about that.
You'll say, yeah, that's fair.
I mean, would it be something if one of them actually collected? Yeah, but come on now. Anyway.
All right.
But I mean, let's talk a little bit, because UFC, what I liked, I think that the main event got done around 6:30, so you had like a good hour and a half to shower, eat dinner, whatever, put the kids to bed or get them ready. And then it was Davis Garcia time. But Saturday for MMA, I guess not MMA, but UFC specifically, did cap off Sergey Pavlovich, Curtis Blades. High stakes in the heavyweight division. We talked about this. Meritocracy, the winner of this one, should be the next title challenger. I get why it's Stipe. I know why it's Stipe. I'm not going to argue it shouldn't be Stipe. This person, though, is the number one contender at heavyweight. You had Curtis Blades, a lot of experience behind him. You had Sergey Pavlovich, absolute tank. Put down Tai Tuivasa, put down Derek Lewis, and you know what? Holy guacamole, he threw hands with Curtis Blades, and he put him down in the first round. The jab got through early. Curtis Blades, I mean, people talked about it. He just didn't seem to ever want to wrestle, just didn't seem to feel like he had that opening, didn't feel like he wanted to go for it.
Yeah.
I think he had one solid attempt after he'd already gotten rocked a little bit. Sergey is fast, Sergey is powerful, and I think that this is just shocking a lot of these heavyweight contenders, and I think it is deceptive how fast he is. I think it's deceptive how strong he is. A guy like Lewis, a guy like Ty, I mean, whatever it is, you just feel like that weight. Like, Daniel Cormier had a great example. He was talking about what's it like to fight Derek Lewis. And he's on the show. Imagine, you know, I'm on video. and you just hear like, just slap like your arm, just like, like just everything just sticks when guys like that hit you. It doesn't feel like Sergey Pavlovich has that kind of power. I think it honestly comes from the fact that he is just, I know it doesn't look like it, he's not the most ripped fellow to be, put it simply and, just objectively. But the speed and I guess the weight in those hands, it just seems to shock these guys. They can't deal with it. And that's what's gotten him to some really high profile victories. None bigger than Saturday, if you ask me. When you look at the overall skill level and style of his opponents, I was very impressed. What about you?
I was very impressed too, and I was watching him in his post-fight interview, or maybe it was pre-fight, I can't remember, where they were making fun of him for gambling on the slots.
That was post, yeah.
I suppose, okay. And just the size of the man in his UFC, hoodie, he just looks thick. He reminds me of Zangief from Street Fighter,
Yeah.
like just that same build. You see them in the cage together, him and Blades. Pavlovich is bigger on top, but Blades has a really, really just strong trunk size bottom half. And, that gives him a base. I think that's part of why he could absorb those punches early on. They were going back and forth. It seemed like Blades wanted to prove a point that he didn't need the wrestling. And by the time he tried it, it was too late. He was too weak to successfully, get a takedown. Pavlovich was ready for it also. I was just impressed by the size of Pavlovich and that jab. The one that really wobbled Curtis Blades, and I think at that point it was just he'd absorbed so many that even a jab was gonna wobble him. But that jab was no joke, right? It was a close range straight jab out, and it put him on Bambi legs. So overall, very impressed with Pavlovich. The conversation's gonna be, of course, John Jones or whoever wins. Well, if they ever book a Jones Stipe fight, whoever wins between that fight. If I'm Pavlovich though, don't you just keep going, keep fighting whoever they put in front of you? Because waiting for that, Easter egg, John Jones, golden ticket moment, it just seems like it's going to be far away.
Now, usually I would agree with you, but if I'm being quite blunt about it, I really do feel that Pavlovich is in a beautiful position. He has stayed active. He hasn't been in the conversation. He is in the conversation now.
Yeah, that's
When I
right.
look at that division, I mean, unless Francis Ngannou comes back, and I'll be quite blunt, it's more likely Jon Jones retires tomorrow more than Ngannou coming back. It's really no one's gonna jump Pavlovich in line right now. I think Ciryl Gane, he's gonna need at least two more, and I mean two good ones, to jump right back in it. I think that everyone else, I mean Tom Aspinall probably gonna need at least two more, once again really look good to be right back in it. And he's not even on the books right now, not even fighting till July. I don't see anything any other guy can do for a minute. Passing up what Pavlovich has done in these past, I want to say it's in a 12-month span. I mean, when did he beat Derek Lewis? I'll look at that as we're discussing this. But my point of that is to say that I don't know that Pavlovich needs to worry about somebody passing him up like they do at welterweight. You know what I
Yeah,
mean?
okay.
On that note, once again, he deserves it. I think whatever happens in November, let's say MSG, Jon Jones, Stipe, awesome. Whatever, one, maybe consider being the backup again. But two, more importantly, you are the guy for the winner. If Jon Jones takes it and walks away into the sunset, I'm sure I mean, let me look at the rankings real quick. The Pavlovich fight, yeah, that happened last July. And then let me see, when did the Tuivasa fight happen for Pavlovich? Yeah, I mean, this has been 7, 8 months, not even a 12-month span, and he's put down these three guys back to back to back in the first round.
Yeah.
He doesn't got to worry about it. So let's say, Jon Jones rides off to the sunset. Okay, well, you know what? Pavlovich and maybe it is a Ciryl Gane. Let me look at the rankings right here. Da 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 da.
Let's see.
What do we got? I mean, Aspinall. Let's say
Yeah.
Aspinall does something good in July. and then we have a vacant title next February. Okay. Aspinall and Sergey. That's fine with me. Aspinall gone. All right. Process of elimination. Let's go. But either way, this guy's sitting pretty. Stipe wins. Pavlovich Stipe.
Yeah.
Perfect. Keep the ball rolling. He is in such a perfect position, I don't even need to add more. What about you?
No, you said it, man. He's rocking and rolling. You're right. He's proved himself. He goes to fight. He shows up. He fights. That's what everybody wants to see. That's what you want to see in the heavyweight division. I mean, when they were going, I mean, no, Blades was right there too. But when they were punching each other, like you're talking about the sounds, it was crazy. It was like watching two moose in the wild ram each other, you know, with their horns. So, yeah, man, Sergey's someone that I know now. I want to see more of. And yeah, I'd like to see him against these big names for sure. So he is sitting pretty. Yeah, I agree with you.
I guess I will say, I'll leave it at this one. Do you predict that Sergey will? I mean, it's April, November is a long way off.
Yeah.
Do you predict he'll elect to be the backup?
Yes, of
Yeah.
course. Yeah, easy, easy.
Now, let me ask you another question. If you're. You know what? I'll be honest. He said it so confidently, I don't think he's going to change his mind. He is 30 years old, I believe. I think he feels like, you know what? If this is the one time I sit on the sidelines, I will. I was going to say, if you're Pavlovich, do you accept the fight with Tom Aspinall on the undercard of Jones Stipe? But you know what? No, I don't. That only benefits Tom. I think if you're going to fight a guy like Tom, let it happen as a title defense or something like that, but he doesn't need to do it. Yeah, it's gonna be an uncomfortable wait, but he's earned it. Yeah, I have nothing more to add. Pavlovich waits.
Yeah.
And I think stick to your guns, man.
Rock on.
Before we talk about Bellator, I want to bring up this one. Kind of stole the show for the wrong reasons. Jared Gordon, Bobby Green. One of the more anticipated fights on the undercard, but man, just. It just sucked. So. Happens very quickly. Bobby Green just trying to come forward, put his weight into an elbow. They clash heads. Jared Gordon rocked, goes to the fence, ends up on the ground, throws his legs up, but really just wasn't there anymore. I'll call it flash knockout. And Bobby Green just kind of tees off for the finish. Looks like a first round victory. Looks like it's a triumphant night for Bobby Green, changing his name. I'm still unclear.
King.
Is he retiring? Is he not? Okay.
Right.
But then, they're reviewing it, and it's not meant to be, they call a no contest. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, I mean, look, honestly, I haven't watched it, so I'd have to watch it. But if was it a pretty obvious, like, just
I'll be honest, it
accidental
happened
head?
really fast.
Yeah.
That's my thing. It wasn't like, kaboom, but it was very clear, like head to chin kind of situation, I felt like.
Okay, I mean that happens. Well, yeah, head to chin. Okay, so not head, not forehead to
Okay,
forehead.
remember like Benavidez Figgy?
Yeah.
Like Joe B is moving around and he just clips Davison. Yeah.
Yep. Well, that's crazy. I mean, we don't often see the replay. So was there a lot of like sitting around waiting for the referees to rewatch this, and everyone's sitting there wondering what's going on?
Well, they had that uncomfortable moment. Joe Martinez says, it looks like he's about to make an announcement, and then he sees that they're still, converging all the officials to say, like, yeah, we're not about to rule a first round TKO. Now,
That's
not quite as bad as the whole thing with the $1 million check for Corey Anderson last year, but I think Bobby could tell, like, man, they. But to take it away from me, and they did.
Yeah, man, that's too bad, because if it's like, you know, if one guy's come in and you're coming too, and it just happens to be bad positioning and no bad intention, I feel like you kind of just got to let it go. You know, you had your chin in the wrong place, and I don't think that should be turned around. I'll have to watch it. I think it's more, you know, if it's already you've already been warned and you keep doing it, but it sounds like it was just, chin in the wrong place at the wrong time. So based on that, I don't like it, but again, I'll have to go back and watch it.
So this becomes a thing, and I bring it up as our topic because I think it is fair. Like, if you're a fighter, you lose money, right? I mean, let's just be blunt about it. And we talk about this all the time. Fouls happen on accident all the time. The shin goes from the inner thigh, bounces off the cup a little bit. Stuff just happens, man. When I think about this, I think, what was it? Kevin Holland, Kyle Daukaus, same thing. Freaking took the headbutt, got choked out, ruled it a no contest, right? Stuff like that. When things like that happen, when Chris Curtis has obviously made a lot of headlines this week about the headbutt with Kelvin Gastelum, Kelvin in that fight last week. He's kind of like been stuffed on a takedown. Curtis's body is over him. Kelvin kind of tries to sit, stand straight up, cracks the bottom of the chin with the top of his head, and really just rocks Chris Curtis. That's bone to bone on the chin. Doesn't get called. The fight goes on. Curtis loses that fight. I get it. This is high stakes, and once again, fouls happen, but I understand the precedent of, well, how do some people get the no contest? How do other people get the. And now, mind you, had Jared Gordon come back to win that fight, it's a different conversation, right? Had Curtis taken the decision, different conversation. Whether the ref sees it or doesn't see it, all very obvious stuff, whether the officials review it or not, obviously subjective. My point to say, I really wish that they had a more finite way of analyzing these, like finite, like precedents for this, like there's got to be someone almost on the side that says, if we get to the end of the first round, we're gonna review and have and make a call. If the fight ends because of this, we're gonna make a call. We need like a blanket thing, plain and simple, because I do think it is unfair when you have a guy like Chris saying, well, why does that guy get a no contest and they both lose their money or the record, and I get stuck. I have to take the L. I completely get it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I get it too. There should be a strict protocol that travels with the UFC no matter what city or state they're in. And I guess that's impossible because of the commissions, but UFC has to be able to have some kind of sway and say like this must apply to every commission. That's probably more work than they're willing to put in. But it's not fair to the fighters. And so yes, there should be something.
I do know, like, NBA has a thing. They have, like, this whole office, like, with a million, like, screens, like, showing the game where they're like, the officials can't be pressured by an arena full of angry Laker fans or what have you if they're about to turn over a call in favor of the other team. In hindsight, like, I get it. Like, at Apex, that probably feels a lot more controlled than, let's say, Madison Square Garden, fifth round, someone gets headbutted and choked out. I completely get it, So I do admit maybe a little more investment in the time and money you need for something like that, but feels like it's the only way to be fair to the fighters, for sure. But yeah, look, good night. Obviously, some finishes all around, good scraps. Bellator has a doubleheader. And I think one of the annoying things is that all of this happens. I think Bellator prelims go through about the end of the main card or for UFC. Obviously, they were running side by side with Davis Garcia. But after the fight, I will say, like, Davis Garcia ended, and I was there right in time for Alima versus Kana Watanabe. We will talk about that, but let's start with the big winner from Saturday at Bellator. I'll say this. I get it. Everyone knows Davis Garcia. It was a big fight. They promoted it great. The most impressive victory in combat sports, Patchy makes Rafion Stotts.
Heck yeah.
Absolutely beautiful knee. Fast, early, unexpected. I know it's hard to say, just like Masvidal's flying knee, but it really did feel like it. Out of nowhere, taking out this dominant guy. Rafion, I mean, his only loss was to Merab Dvalishvili. Defending champion, had won that high-stakes fight with Danny Sabatello in the semis. And really, they're just getting going. And Patchy talks about it every time that, you think the shot's coming. Rafion would kind of like, he would react very committed to being ready to defend a takedown.
Yeah.
And that opened up the knee. Beautiful walk-off. Look, it's not as dramatic as when, like, Mark Hunt walk-off KOs somebody.
Yeah.
It was pretty dang close for a bantamweight. And I'll just toss it to you. What were your thoughts on
Yeah,
Petri
man.
Mix's performance?
It was slick. It was slick. Who did we just see with some killer knees? Brandon Royval, right? Last week. That was also slick. A little bit different of a setup, but it also kind of reminded me, the way he hid the knee reminded me of the way Leon Edwards hid the kick against Kamaru Usman, using the hands, setting it up with the hands. Rafion Stotts thought he was, getting out of the way of a hook or a jab. I can't remember what it was. Patchy Mix kind of threw up both hands like boom, boom, and then the knee came right behind it, the number three. So it was slick, man. And it's something you don't often see, these killer knockouts, like highlight worthy, as you say, the best finishing move of all the fights this weekend. You don't see that all too often from Bellator, so this was a big one for them, especially being in Hawaii with all the hype. A great way to win any fight, but to make it a championship winning move and $1 million winning move, that's like icing on top of the cake, on top of the cherry. Good night for Patchy Mix, man. He was probably celebrating in Hawaii, probably still celebrating.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, what can you say? Life-changing, career-changing. I interviewed him before the fight. I found old tweets where he said, "First thing I'm doing when I make money, I'm buying my mom and my daughter a house."
Nice.
Obviously, he's kind of in the running for cutest couple in MMA with Tatiana Suarez. So, as a pair and everything she's been through, and now they have this, it feels very triumphant as a moment. Collectively for him. And we kind of have this talk. Bantamweight is such a competitive weight class worldwide in MMA. I mean, Bellator has a very solid, this 8-man field that they had for the Grand Prix.
Yeah.
UFC is obviously UFC. When I look at guys like Rafion, Patchy, Danny Sabatello look good, quite bluntly, on the undercard. I mean, this is just a beautiful time for this weight class. And for sure, I put guys like Patchy and Rafion, they could give UFC guys a run for their money. There's just so much talent at that weight class worldwide that it's really like, wow, and I say that to say, this guy not only changed his life, but if you were to tell me, and I know this obviously isn't his situation, if you told me later this year we'd see Patchy in UFC, I'd be like, dang, I'm excited. Give him
Yeah,
some top five guys.
that's right.
That
That's right.
that's how good that performance was. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally agree.
Obviously the bantamweight title, that was ironically for the interim. You remember that they made it an interim title last year when Sergio Pettis had to withdraw from the Grand Prix. Sergio obviously fighting Patricio Pitbull, who's moving down in about like a month and a half. Maybe a little less would change. Patchy mixed right there, in the mix.
Yep.
Obviously, look, next man up, but I will say, I get it. When you see a guy like Adesanya do what he does, when you see some of these other guys potentially, I mean, we're only in April, there's a lot of time to work for everybody. If you tell me Patchy mixed were to potentially take out Rafion and Sergio Patricio in 1 year, just style points alone, you're in the running for Fighter of the Year. And I know that almost always goes to a UFC guy, but that's the kind of run this kid is on, you know what I mean? And I just want to acknowledge that.
Yeah, for sure, man. It's definitely, Bellator needed the new next big name to pop, and I think it's Patchy Mix. Not only does he have an awesome name, but he's doing stuff like he did in the tournament and then finishing it the way he did. So if I'm Bellator, I'm pushing, I'm running with him full force, and I'm not letting him go.
Yeah, I mean, look, his next step is already lined up. Like we said, we don't need to do more. The future for the flyweight division is a little more interesting, so I'm gonna work out of order. Liz Carmouche, Deanna Bennett. So this one had more controversy. It just made more headlines than I think people ever expected, and I think that that really had in large part because it went on Friday. All of these fights, all the combat happened on Saturday. Friday night was all Bellator. So, first off, Deanna Bennett misses weight by, I think, less than a pound, but the fact is she was off after multiple attempts. I know Liz Carmouche had thoughts on it. I'll talk about it after. Deanna Bennett starts wrestling, and for a minute there, it starts to look like we might have, this might come down to the wire. Liz Carmouche might really need to do something. It might, we're about to have the whole thing. Liz kept the belt on the line. It's about to be vacated. We're about to have part three potentially. Liz Carmouche gets the position out there in the championship rounds. Arm triangle gets the win, shuts it all down. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, man, it was exciting, and it look, you don't want, if you're rooting for the champ, you don't want to be in those positions where you're thinking this could be it, they're gonna lose the belt. But it's kind of, makes things more exciting. She really had to work hard for it, which makes the victory even sweeter, right? So I was really impressed with her. We know she's tough. I mean, just think about even from her UFC days, like Liz Carmouche has no quit. There's no quit in her. So happy to see that she was able to pull it out, and it was a tricky one up against the cage. Not a lot of room to get that choke. Had to kind of finesse it, but once she put a little bit of extra pressure on there, she got the tap right away. So I'm happy to see her win, especially because, I'll leave the setup to you, but because of what it means for something we were talking about last week.
Yeah, I mean, look, obviously big win. Like I said, she kind of, I'm gonna just say it, she cooked Deanna Bennett in the post-fight presser. She was
I
just
missed it.
like,
What did she say?
oh, she was just like, that is so unprofessional. I'm glad to get rid of her and her. I'll be honest, Deanna was a little crass to say the least. She's making innuendos about the microphone in her hands, below her mouth, and I'm like. And Liz Carmouche is like, I'm glad to beat her crass, big mouth. I'm like, holy guacamole.
Getting serious, huh?
Yeah. But, okay, look, I mean, I get it. She had feelings and she was expressing them. I want to acknowledge that became a story. But, I mean, I'm going to talk a little bit about the future of Liz in a bit. We talk about now Alima Leigh McFarlane. I'm not going to lie. For a minute there, I thought Khanna might have edged that one out on Saturday night. I thought that Khanna just got to a few more positions. I felt like Alima just kind of seemed to have to catch up to her in rounds two and three. I felt like round one, I felt like Alima kind of just kept reversing, kept getting to the better position enough times. Rounds two and three felt a lot closer, but I felt it was a little more Khanna. Ultimately, split decision goes to Alima Leigh. I acknowledge once again they were competitive. There weren't as many big, I get it. You kind of want, oh, it's a close round. Someone gets that knockdown. Someone hits those really clean combinations that really stun somebody. I get it. This one didn't have that. It was a lot of, working into grappling exchanges and all that. Alima takes it. And now we have the situation. Scott Coker seems down. Alima obviously called for it. Liz looked game. Next for the flyweight title. And now we have this awkward thing. What do we do? So first off, Alima essentially said, look, if we do a $1 million tournament, that's worth me taking multiple fights for the tournament. Win $1 million, try to win the title again. Okay. If not, Alima pretty much said, yeah, let me retire with a ch shot at the belt. And Scott Coker didn't, rain on the parade, but now we have this awkward thing. What do you do with that flyweight division? Are you okay with, okay, 39-year-old Liz Carmouche taking on the retiring Aleem Allais, and you just have a vacant flyweight title after this. What are your thoughts?
I'm actually okay with that because of what, you know, Aleem Allais cleverly set up in her in cage post-fight interview, right? She's like, first of all, I didn't know they weren't training together anymore. That was news to me.
When I've asked Liz, it's something like Liz moved to a different part of San Diego and they had their own gym already. So it's like, it's not like they don't still cross train a bit. They're not still great friends, but it's just like, logistically, they told me it's just a lot harder than several years ago. Okay. Ironically, right at the time when Liz came over to Bellator.
Okay, got it. Well, anyway, still a game to fight each other, right? I love it. You know, she's like, my sister wife, let's do this. And she's like, I want to fight again soon. I know Liz wants to fight again soon, December in Hawaii. Not only does that sound amazing for the belt, but I'm also going to be in Hawaii in December. So I'm hoping that they do it when I'm there. Side note. This would be amazing, and I'm okay with it if they, you know, if Aleem Allais retires after that, because it actually seems like a great way to segue into the Grand Prix for the flyweight division. Now, are you saying Liz is also going to retire too, or just because of her age, maybe she won't perform as well?
So let me just ask you bluntly. Look, if it's a whole, I'm going to do this till the wheels fall off, power to you, right?
Yep.
But I did look at that. Liz Carmouche is 39. She's beaten Velasquez. She would defeat Aleem. Now it's kind of like, well, like I said, is it just going to the wheels fall off? Or are we also now talking about, well, what would be the perfect send-off? Because if you ask me, you beat Aleem, you kind of hold off your protege, showing you're still on top. I mean, for a woman who's been in this game and had all the fights that Liz has, what more do you want? Is my question I would ask you.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair, right? You got to kind of look at the landscape and say, do I want to essentially be a gatekeeper champion if I beat my protege, my best friend, Aleem Allais? Or do I want to just take this awesome victorious feeling and walk off into the sunset and, you know, do something else? That's a fair question. You know, 39 for any division but heavyweight is, you know, you're pushing it, right? You're pushing the limits of your body, of anything, of expectations from that age. So I do hear you. She seems, you know, sort of a little bit different than most fighters, super more tough and more game than you usually hear from people at that age. So we don't know, obviously, but I get it. I get what you're saying. I understand. My other question would be, you know, I'm talking about if they fight in December in Hawaii and whoever wins gets to, you know, either keep going or walk off into the sunset. The division that's left, is there enough to make a Grand Prix exciting without the two biggest names? What do you think there?
I am glad you asked me that question. I really am. Okay, so let me start with Liz. All right, so if you look at Bellator right now, top numbers 1 through 4, Juliana Velasquez beat her twice. Mm-hmm. Kana Watanabe took her out in one round for a title shot. Aleem. And then Deanna Bennett, who's now 0-2. Mm-hmm. That's the top five. When you look at the rest of the girls that would make up a top 8 or 9, you know, or even 10, you have Denise Kielholz, who just lost to Ilyara Jawani. You have Diana Saragova out of Russia, young up-and-comer. You have Vita Arteaga, who just lost. You have Joani, like I said. Then you have Sumiko Inaba, who's kind of like on the Aleem Allais, AJ McKee development team right now. It's like, well, don't get me wrong. Those women are obviously all up and coming. You got several of them on the good side of 28, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
That it's kind of like, okay, it's not... I almost feel like now there's a jump. Like all the girls between, you know, the top of the division and the developmental girls, Liz is already beaten. If we're being honest, Aleem's taken on a bunch of them. So now we have a situation. You could do it to develop a new star, but I almost feel like that would be unfair to the women who are currently there. You know, and I'll say this. You could do a tournament with Alima and Liz. I don't know that you could do one without.
Yeah.
And as much as I like Alima and Liz, I just don't know that I am as excited to see a lot of the up-and-comers in a tournament. And I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone would agree with you. I certainly do. And so I kind of go back to what we said last week when we were lamenting that they didn't make this Hawaii visit Carmouche Alimale title shot. And we said something about, you know, like the value of this in the moment is greater than extending it and creating maybe, you know, another fight later down the line. So, okay, now we still have the potential for them to meet up in December, unless they don't value the strength of the moment again. And so, yeah, if they're not in the tournament, it would only be because, you know, my wish would come true and they fight in December. But yeah, if they're not in the tournament, it like downgrades the interest from my interest and the general value of that tournament a lot. And if I think the only way you could ramp it up is if flyweights, so there happen to be some UFC flyweights that have become available and that they could get them over there in time to start this tournament. I don't know, you know, contracts or whatever, obviously, but that's the only way I think you could spice it up.
I got bad news. I think Scott Coker did say that the Blaisdell Center is set to undergo renovations for the rest of the year.
Oh, okay.
Which, you know, not to say there's not other venues that are suitable for Bellator, not UFC for a lot of reasons. There's only one venue. Wait, look, beat the dead horse. There's only one venue. It's outdoors that would suit UFC. And UFC is requesting a lot more money than Bellator does to bring an event there. And that's the be all end all of that.
Yep.
But I'm not gonna lie, and I'm gonna just hit you with one more. I think it's gonna be it in Inglewood once again. Boom. There we go.
In December.
Not December, maybe August, September.
Oh, okay. Oh, you mean, what do you mean? What's going to be
Liz and Alima.
Oh, that's sooner than I would have figured. Okay.
I mean, they're fine. Come on.
No, you're right. You're right. They're fine. December, but you know, Alima likes to take like 6 months off. So her saying I want to fight right away.
Well, I don't know that she would want to take 6 months off at the finish line.
At the finish line, yeah.
You know
Get
what I
in there.
mean? Yeah.
Hey man, that's good too. I love the forum. And they that's one of their spots. I mean, like they have like three or they have like Bellator's like four go-to spots, right? The forum, the SAP Center, the one in Connecticut, I can't remember what it's called.
Mohegan Sun.
Yes,
Yeah.
and then the Blaisdell. So yeah, that's I'm up for that for sure. I might actually have to get some tickets there.
Poor Thackerville, Oklahoma. They've just been forgotten, haven't they? They
Yeah.
used to be there all the time.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, no, but I want to bring up one more question. You remember how all of this fell apart with Liz and UFC just kind of cuts her after losing the title shot, and it's like, you know, it kind of felt like essentially they felt like Liz at the time was just too good that she was going to keep away new contenders from Valentina. At the state of the flyweight division then, when you look at Liz's game against someone young like Alexa Grasso, do you think part of it feels a little like, you know, imagine if Liz was in the mix still right now?
At the UFC?
Yeah. Or do you feel like those young up-and-comers would have knocked her off rather than she would stay at the top?
Oh, that's a good question because she's so tough. And I'm not saying that the other fighters aren't tough, but I think she can take a punch better than even Shevchenko did against Grasso. She's craftier. She's craftier than who's the most, you know, veteran fighter in that division? Not necessarily age-wise, but experience-wise, I still give it to Shevchenko. But I think Carmouche is craftier than Shevchenko. And so if I'm thinking not how she would fare against Shevchenko, but someone like Grasso, yeah, man, I think she might be able to see what I think with Carmouche is she's not stubborn. There's no ego. And so she wouldn't feel like, oh man, I gotta show the world that I can do stand-up with Grasso. and I'm going to do whatever I have to do to win. And so I think she could still hold her own against some of these newer folks. I really do, thinking about it. And she's got a grit, no quit attitude that comes, I think, with her military background and just having to just pull tooth and nail to always show the world that she's still one of the top MMA fighters in any promotion. I think there's something there, though, where I think she would still be circling top five, top six in that division, UFC.
When I look at those girls, I almost feel like, one, like someone like Erin Blanchfield kind of feels like, can do what Liz can do and is, 14 years younger. But when I look at that division, when I think about being a strong grappler, it doesn't feel like it could ever be a better time for someone like Liz to still be in that mix.
Yeah.
I mean, she left before the whole stuff with Andrade and all these other girls coming up, Jennifer Maia, etc. That I do feel like you can't really just throw the bucket of cold water that she couldn't be in the mix, but
Yeah.
that did cross my mind. I'm like, Liz Carmouche, Alexa Grasso with that wrestling.
Yeah, right.
Not the worst, not the best matchup all the time for Alexa. Obviously, the age is such a big factor. I'm not saying that Alexa probably, and also has gotten a lot better, but my point being, it's like that still pushes someone like Alexa Grasso. So, it did get me thinking, like, man, this woman still got it and all this. So, but yeah, not meant to be. In terms of leaving the vacant title, I mean, there's always going to be somebody, but if you told me Liz and Alima were to retire this year, I am a little hard pressed because I feel like a lot of the girls are very up and down outside of them. I mean, Juliana Velasquez, I think, is still the third horse in that race. But when I look at Joanne, Kjellholt, some of these other veterans, Vita, they've just been so up and down since their title shots. And it's like, yeah, I don't know. I just have a hard time seeing any woman hold it anymore after Alima and Liz, to be honest, and Juliana, respectfully.
Yeah, that's right. It's like if you can't string together at least two wins, you're kind of making it hard for us to get behind one person to rally and to even get excited for this tournament that they're considering, or yeah, for
Or
sure.
that Alima's trying to get them to consider, but
Yeah,
yeah,
oh
for
yes.
sure. Anyway, look, it was a great weekend in combat sports, like I said, or like you brought up. I mean, you had Ryan Garcia and everybody. It was very busy. And then during the week, I mean, abundance of riches. Dana White essentially said, "We're getting to summer. We have allergies. Let's announce the summer announcement bonanza." So we're gonna go chronologically. First off, next Saturday, 5 rounds. 2 weeks' notice, Bilal Muhammad, Gilbert Burns, co-main event at UFC 288, May 6. What are your thoughts?
Dude, that's crazy. I mean, they were like jibber jabbering at each other, right? There was some beef, and some people saying this makes sense, this doesn't make sense. So I'm being props to all three parties involved, the two fighters in the UFC for getting it done. This is a legit exciting matchup.
Yeah, they get it done. Bilal's coming off Ramadan. They're agreeing to 170, 5 rounds for crying out loud.
For crying out loud.
2 week notice. Not for nothing. I know they're both managed by Ali Abdelaziz. They have to have got it in paperwork. They win this, they get the title shot. Colby Covington, you're out. I
Yeah.
would. There's no way they accept this fight like this unless they know it's worth the belt. You know
Yeah,
what I mean?
the fighters themselves might have been like, "Yeah, let's go," because they just want to fight. But Ali was like, and he has a voice, right? He has a very strong voice in the UFC, a lot of sway. That was 100% the first thing he probably said. There's no way I'm putting this together. There's no way I'm convincing Gilbert Burns to come off of, when did he fight?
Like
Last
a month ago, less than a month
less
ago.
than a month
It was
ago, right?
like
There's
2 weeks, 3 weeks.
no way I'm getting him to do this unless you guarantee a title shot. And where are they fighting?
New
Newark or New
Jersey,
Jersey? New
yeah.
Jersey, yeah. So, not a time, there's no time difference he has to suffer, right? But still.
I mean, look, they're game, but once again, look, if I were a fighter, I'm not going to just do that on short notice. Look how good I've been doing. Look at all this work.
Yep.
Just to kind of fumble it because I wanted to be game and be gangster and fight? No, I mean, you know how we just look at Ngannou, look at all this. injuries and all that. Jiří Prochazka, don't just take a short notice fight when you're on a roll. You know what you're worth. Bilal does, Gilbert does. 99% sure they made sure they got it said and written and guaranteed somewhere. Colby Covington is out if they win this fight. And I
Oh,
think
yeah.
that's perfect. All right, let's go.
Yep.
Card needed it, they got it. That also sets it up. As we talked about, Charles Oliveira was out of that fight in 2 weeks, but it is confirmed they are going to put it back together June 10th, UFC 289. Not much to say. Obviously, Beneil teased this earlier, but I'm just glad UFC is saying, hey, our sources, our connections to Oliveira are saying he will be good to go 1 month from now. Sucks for New Jersey, good for Vancouver. That's all I could say.
Yeah, exactly. Now that still makes that card, a little thin.
Needs a little help,
It
yeah.
is a little help, yes,
A
sir.
little bit more, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, Nunes is she's on many people's Mount Rushmores for female MMA. But like I said last time, this is not a fight I was looking to see. I don't think it's going to be competitive, so we definitely need a little bit more. Oliveira Dariush is going to be competitive. It's going to be a killer fight, but a little more meat on this sandwich, please.
Now they add avocado, stuff like
Avocado,
that. Yeah.
yes. Don't
It
charge
needs
me
to
extra
add
for
avocado. It needs to
it.
add avocado. It's
Yes,
got some
sir.
meat. It's got the bread. We just need a little
And
avocado now.
that Dijon. Give me some of that Dijon, please.
We got some main events for essentially the month of June. Marvin or June, July. But first one, Marvin Vettori, Jared Cannonier, Apex headliner on June 17. You know what? So I'll get into this, but competitively, solid fight. Both of them have fought Adesanya. Both of them are not getting the immediate title shot. I think it's good for them to kind of, hey, who is gonna be in that running? Who's one of the horses that is still favored in this race to get back to the top? So competitively, I like it. Rankings wise, it makes sense. What about you?
Yeah, it makes sense. Here's what I want to see. I want to see these guys not be careful. I want to see them charge towards each other and give us a good fight. I don't want to see them play this for points or thinking about what happens next or what order this puts them in the rankings and how close to the title shot. Like, I just want to see them let loose. Of course, it's just me sitting here on my chair saying that, but those are my hopes.
Yeah, I want to point out, we talked about them already, but Jack Hermanson, Brendan Allen's also in June. The following week after Vettori and Cannonier, Ilia Topuria, Josh Emmett, that was confirmed for the 24th, Jacksonville. We talked about that last week. The next one, though, that was new, this one took a lot of people. This, out of all of them, was the second most shocking. No, all right, third most, if I'm being honest. But this one certainly was the most WTF. Sean Strickland against unranked Abus Magomedov, headlining an Apex event on July 1st. I mean, you know what? I'm just toss it to you. What do you have to say about this one?
I mean, I hate to say this, but I'm not familiar with Mr. Abus. So I was just kind of like, okay, I guess that's a good thing. Is Sean Strickland just saying, I want to stay busy? Or is Abus someone that they want to put up against the now maybe sort of entering gatekeeper status, Sean Strickland? Like, I'm not sure what to make of this fight, but is this going to be a banger? What are we looking at here?
So Abus has a very respectable run. I believe he's one of the last guys to beat Saad Abusi, reigning welterweight champion. What can I say? He's been rather inactive, and so he's only had one fight since 2020. All right. So Sean Strickland did point out everyone just seemed to be booked. He did mention Dracus. I guess he pushed for Dracus. They had other plans for Dracus, which we'll get into right now. It feels like this probably sets up Paulo Costa with the Wolf, which we'll talk about in a minute too. Really, there was nobody else? That was my question.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I mean, good for Mr. Magomedov. I would take the fight if I were him, but really? I mean, for crying out loud, if you told me Sean Strickland was next for Israel Adesanya, wouldn't have been the most shocked.
Right, yeah. So what's going on? That's why it makes me
And
think
instead,
like,
you get a guy who's unranked. What? I.
yeah.
What? Huh? Anyway, look, Abusa, another veteran, got experience, but yeah, on the name value, I was like, I wouldn't. Him versus Sean Strickland, not on my bingo card. Leave it at that.
Oh, burn.
Look, if he shocks me, then my goodness, power to him, but. On paper, yeah, I am shaking my head at what happened. Which leads to our next announcement, probably the biggest one of the week to a lot of people. Robert Whittaker, Dricus du Plessis, International Fight Week, UFC 2, what is that one, 290? July 8th. Dana White comes out and says the winner of this one gets Israel Adesanya next in the fall. What are your thoughts?
That's I mean, I think Dricus du Plessis got what he wanted, right? He was able to talk his way into Adesanya's mind, and it worked enough that Adesanya was, you know, talking about him without saying his name, but that almost makes it, you know, more intriguing of a potential fight. And of course, Robert Whittaker. I didn't necessarily need to see the third one, should he beat du Plessis against Adesanya, but you know, Whitaker's always game, right? And I think often about when there's a rubber match between two folks when you don't really think you needed to see one, with the exception of Peña Núñez, where I really still don't think we need to see that. With Whitaker Adesanya, it's like, you know, you're going to get a good fight. It doesn't matter necessarily how the first two went because Whitaker's always super game. He wants that belt back. And I think about, you know, now this was the fourth one with Pacquiao Marquez, right? Like, you just, if you keep going after that same person, you're going to find a way to win. This could be the moment for Whittaker if he beats Dricus. And if Dricus wins, I mean, talk about bad blood for bad blood, hype, you know, interviews, press conferences. It's going to be crazy. So this is a win-win for fans.
Oh. I got some thoughts.
Let's hear them.
Okay, competitively, it's a great fight. If you are building up Dracus, it's great. I admit that right now. I think we're in this weird scenario. I'll be honest, I feel like UFC. I'm not a matchmaker. I don't know who said yes or no behind the scenes, but this is not how I would have played the cards. And I'll tell you why. All right, so in this scenario, Robert Whittaker is heavily favored to beat Dricus. And Dricus, anything could happen when these guys are out there, obviously. But let's say, hypothetically, Whittaker beats Dricus. What is the demand right now for Whittaker Adesanya 3? I know Whittaker beat Vettori. Has he had another fight since Adesanya? I thought he's only fought Vettori, right?
I don't know. Let me
Let
check.
me double yeah double check that, but let's say he's only fought Vettori, beats Dricus. I can't tell you that Adesanya in this moment after that win over Pereira is knocking my socks off for a third fight with Whittaker. I just feel like there were other options. I'd rather see how far can this guy take it, that to run it back, particularly in what you know will be a pay-per-view headliner with a guy he's already beaten twice like this. I can't tell you I really wanted to see it. So to make that guarantee for Whittaker, I'm not saying I wouldn't mind objectively, but I think as the fans, you want to let these things marinate and build up. We haven't really gotten that for Rob. So I think that that wasn't the move. Obviously, if you're Dracus, once again, you beat a guy like Whittaker, you are hands down the guy for Adesanya. That makes sense. In this scenario, okay, we just heard Dana White praise Israel Adesanya. Oh, we're ready to see you. He wants to get back there. I love when guys are like that. You just say that, and then you're just telling me now that your middleweight champion that you're so happy is staying active isn't coming back till October? And it's April? Okay, by the way, he only did fight Vettori.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
So I'm a little like I would have thought you could probably put Adesanya August and then run him back December, January, depending on how the fight goes, right? I mean, Like, all right, what are we doing? But okay, all right. So that's the plan. If it were me, I would have gone Drake is Sean Strickland then. That way, no matter what, you get a new guy for Adesanya. All right, I'm not a fan of using a guy, particularly someone like Whittaker. And I know we just kind of got it with Max Holloway, but that's after three straight losses to the champ. Using someone like Whittaker to build up the next guy. Now, mind you, I understand if you are trying to sell a fight with Adesanya, having a guy just beat Robert Whittaker, who has only been beaten by Adesanya at middleweight, would be huge. In which case, all right, if you're going to do this, then go Khamzat and Whittaker. Because then, okay, now it's like, all right, if you imagine if Khamzat, after all he's done, beats Robert Whittaker and then is going to fight Adesanya. Holy guacamole. One of the biggest fights of the year. Easily. Instead, now this almost seems to lock in Khamzat versus Paulo Costa, probably Abu Dhabi, if Chael Sonnen and rumors are expected to be believed. In which case, I'm like, so Khamzat hasn't fought since September. He's going to take 13 months off to fight Paulo Costa? And you're doing what with Whittaker and Dracus? And what with Sean Strickland? I am in shock right now at how that middleweight picture played out. I just really am. Because I feel like you put guys in probably the hardest position to leap into title contention. Or in Hamzat's case, this man just got burned for 13 months, isn't even getting a title shot at the end of it. I am just floored, to say the least. I'm gonna toss it to you to react to everything I've just said. I'm sorry.
Look, man, no, you're right. As always, you're opening my mind a little bit here because I hadn't considered the Khamzat factor when I was, saying not praising but supporting the Whittaker Dracus matchup. So yes, that is definitely an option that would have created a lot more excitement for the next opponent for Adesanya. But as I'm looking at the rankings for middleweight, I kind of get why they did it because obviously Pereira is not going to be in that division anymore. We don't need to see that fight again. But if he had chosen to stay at 185, maybe you could have paired Pereira up with Whittaker a little bit later. But like Paulo Costa, Marvin Vettori, Jared Cannonier, we don't need to see Adesanya against those guys again. And so you're kind of looking at like who would be an interesting fight for Adesanya apart from Khamzat now that I'm considering this. And if I'm sitting here, I'm in the war room, right? And I'm thinking, okay, if we pair up Robert Whittaker with Dracus, there's already a storyline for Dracus should he beat Whittaker to fight Adesanya. And if I'm Robert Whittaker and I'm like, you're pairing me up with this guy? I would kind of be pissed. I'm like, what are you trying to tell me? Am I a gatekeeper? What are you saying to me? It seems like you're setting me up to make this fight for Dracus. So maybe they're thinking about that, and they know how Robert Whittaker, what kind of fighter he is, and how game he is. Maybe they kind of wanted to piss him off a little bit. I don't know, but I definitely wouldn't have wanted to see Adesanya, Vettori, Cannonier, Costa, Sean Strickland. I don't. Yeah, okay, if they had paired him up with Adesanya, we would have been fine, but I wouldn't have been that excited about it because to me, Adesanya wins that fight easily. So who's left? Like in the division, the next biggest name after Adesanya still is, excluding Khamzat, still is Robert Whittaker. So I understand your frustration, but I also kind of get what the UFC is doing here.
You still have scenarios where this could all play out for the best, but I go into this knowing that someone is getting odd manned out, whether it be Khamzat. I mean, think about this. If this is all true, and let's say Khamzat beats anybody in July or October, you're telling me he now has to wait, like, what, another 6, 7 months for a title shot? Khamzat? The guy who became famous off fighting 3, 4 times in 1 year? I just, what? I'm just still very in shock at this. But look, I get it. Once again, behind the scenes, who says yes, who says no, why, when, where, how? None of us know that, so I'm going to assume a bit of that happened, but when I saw the way these cards played out, I did just go into it feeling like this sucks for Dracus, this sucks for Rob, this sucks for Sean, this sucks for Dromzhat. Stylistically, that sucks for Paolo. And that's just where I stand at middleweight. I think that you have one of the best times recently in that division for it, and instead we've had quite the odd pairing of everybody in the deck. So, I'm just gonna go in circles at this point, but yeah, for the record, I would have rather seen them get Izzy in there with Adesanya, maybe build up Sean and Dracus, and we just get this train moving the way it was always meant to. And yeah, I'd like a scenario where we could see both Izzy Dracus, Izzy Sean, Izzy Hamzat. Instead, it almost feels like we are in the worst position to maybe get one of those. And so, yeah, that's where I stand. Maybe it works out for the best. Anything could happen. But today, on April 24th, I can't say I liked it. Anyway, when we get there, the fights will fight. They'll fight the fights, and we'll talk about it. I'm sure it'll be a good time. Talking about it this Saturday, Ricky Simon, Song Yadong. Set for a three rounder on the undercard. Renato Moicano, Armin Sarukian is out. That promotes them. They accept a five round main event on essentially 2 weeks-ish notice, maybe a little more. Look, Song is one of, at 25 years old, one of the best prospects at bantamweight. If I'm not mistaken, he might be like the youngest guy that you would consider in that top eight. Kind of running worldwide. I mean, I'm including Merab, Aljo Henry, Patchy, Rafion, Corey Sanhagen. You know what I mean? At 25, he's the youngest guy who you would put in that mix of, oh, these are top bantamweights. I mean, he was having a great fight with Corey Sanhagen before the cuts ended that one last year. So it's like, all right, you have a very, respectable guy trying to make his name. And Ricky Simon, I think people are sleeping on the fact that he's been putting it together really well as of late. He's a veteran guy, been in the UFC a minute. Probably getting a guy like Song at the best time, in terms of, okay, he just lost, he's coming off the injury, etc., or coming off healing the cuts, I mean, etc., etc. But you have a guy 30 years old, still, relatively athletic prime. Solid record, fought plenty of names. Competitively, if not in name value, you have just about everything you could want out of a fist fight. Now, when you talk about would I have, am I jumping out of my seat maybe for this main event compared to the schedule we've had? No, that's fair. But as a fist fight, you have a lot to like out of these two. What are your thoughts?
Exactly that. It's not the matchup we were trying to, muster together last week. Who's close, who's available, who can really bring it. So, and who is a big name, a big enough name, right? Those were some of our parameters there. So what we do have is some strong, impressive names, not the biggest ones. I think we're talking about Sean Strickland, but I really love Ricky Simon, man. He brings it. And Song Yadong does too. So for the short notice, the amount of time they had, I'm cool with it. I'm not racing to the TV to watch it live necessarily. Actually, I definitely won't be able to because I'm going to Monster Jam this weekend, just as a side
Enjoy.
note. Oh, yeah. Very excited. So I'll have to watch this on the replay, but I think we're going to get a good scrap. And that's all you can ask for on short notice, a good scrap between two guys who are hopefully getting compensated well for coming in short notice. And the rest of the card is like head scratcher a little bit for me. Not the matchups necessarily, but the names I'm not super familiar with. So this is, I don't know if we ever get numbers on ESPN Apex cards, but this one's probably going to be on the lower end. However, it's still going to be a good scrap. So it is what it is.
I mean, well, you got to think about it. Look at the cards they've had. They haven't even been at the Apex until this Saturday for like 5, 6 weeks, right? And so look, we've been a little spoiled. I mean, you look at what they try to stack on this card, that card, Miami. Before that, John Jones, it's like, okay, I see what we're doing. But my point of this is to say that I do believe that this card, once again, this fight is going to be a scrap. Look, I always say this. This is a very MMA problem, and I get it. It's because we've had generations of fans who remember what it was like with every fight night being stacked. Why? Because there were so few of them back then. And as we've had a saturation of the market, I get it. Not every fight night is knocking my socks off. That being said, I mean, who are the two worst teams in football, in basketball, in baseball? If the Magic are playing the hold on, are the Wizards better? Let's just say they are. If the Magic are playing the Timberwolves, do fans complain? Why are the Timberwolves playing the Magic? What are they doing? Why would they? No, why? Because there is an understanding that it is a schedule. And even if you don't tune in, guess what? The guys are going to put on their suits. The guys are going to pick up their microphones and go backstage for interviews. And they're going to broadcast this game. Why? Because that's the schedule. In today's day and age, where we have, on average, every month, every week has a UFC event, every other month has maybe a week off on the UFC schedule. I mean, think about it. There's maybe 10 Saturdays a year where there's no UFC. So, this, I think the fan base just has not started to transition to think of it as, guess what? Sometimes the schedule is what it is. It's not a stacked mega event, but they're going to put on these fights and you could tune in or not. Just the same way, not everyone watches every baseball game. There's like 180 games of the regular season, Natalie, in baseball. Do you think people watch all 180 every night?
Look,
No. All right, maybe some.
some people do. Baseball is a weird one, but yes, okay. For the most part, no, we don't. Not over here.
Basketball, 82 games. Do people watch all 82 games of their favorite team?
Mostly not.
Yes. For crying out loud, what is it? How many are in football? 16? People don't even watch all 16 regular season football games of their team.
And there's just 16.
Yes, so you're telling me that, people are gonna watch every single Saturday, every fight card, let alone every main event. It's okay. But anyway, my point is that, like, I get it. Not the most stacked card. We have a good scrap on Saturday. Guys looking to take advantage of the main event spotlight. Probably try to get a fight that will really launch them into that top five conversation if they win their next fight. But the fact is, you win this one, you probably set up a good fight in your next one. And then 2024, late 23, we are maybe talking about title contention. But it starts with a good win here. Song's gonna bring it. Ricky's gonna bring it. Call him macaroni, as they say. And let's go.
I'm with you.
Finally, next week, one championship finally touches down in the United States. Demetrius Johnson, Adriano Moraes, number three, from Denver. Friday night, the following night on Saturday, UFC 287, or is that, sorry, 288. Aljamain Sterling, Henry Cejudo, new co-main event, Belal Muhammad, Gilbert Burns. What are your thoughts on everything?
Well, I'm definitely excited for that. Especially the last minute. Well, no, the main card, the main event, excuse me. Cejudo coming back, like that's gonna be killer. We've seen what he can do when he's up against it, but Aljamain also still has to keep proving that he is the best at that weight class, right? Everyone keeps counting him out, and he time and time again he proves them wrong. So that's gonna be a really, really crazy fight, I believe. Now, Oliveira, Bilal last minute, or well, not last minute, but no, wait, I'm getting my fights confused here. Hold on.
Bilal and Gilbert.
Yes, that's right, Belonga. Yes, thank you. Last minute matchup. I mean, I'm almost a little more excited for that one just because it's such a last minute thing. They were beefing. This is gonna be crazy. So looking down the line, that's what I'm looking forward to the most.
For me, as a grouping, that main card with Jessica Andrade and Jan Shonnan and all that, the three, I'm like, okay, that's a good like block of television, you know? So I look at it in that way. Each fight objectively, I mean, I would have loved Bilal and Gilbert to have a full camp, for crying out loud. So I'll say that, but I think for what they're going to provide on short notice, be just fine. The intrigue of Henry and Aljo sells itself. You don't need to talk too much about that. People get it. I actually really want to see if one does something special for the US debut. Like, I'll say it. I feel like fans in the stadium are not really a big component of the shows I've seen on Amazon, right?
Right.
I'd like to think that, you know, I really want to see a full crowd get pumped up for Demetrius and Adriano and Rod Tang and Sage Northcutt and all of them coming up. I really think that would be an element that really elevates the shows. Because I feel like one, and I know the Asian culture at the events is different than the American one, but I want to see a very just rambunctious crowd add to the element that we already know is one championship and the way they produce those shows. I think that's going to be, outside of anything UFC, that's what I'm most looking forward to. The fights are fine on Friday night. Obviously, high level guys in Demetrius and Adriano, but that's what I want to see, the crowd on Friday. And I think it's going to add to something that we haven't seen in one before.
Okay.
Who wins? Who loses? What are our thoughts? We'll talk about all of that next week. Until then, guys, thank you for listening. Remember, like, comment, and subscribe, and we'll be back next week.